Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, the podcast where we discuss the culture we love that society sometimes tries to make us feel ashamed of. My name is Caroline, and I'm feeling very attacked right now. And she doesn't jump guns, she is the boom boom gun. Rebecca Lucy Taylor, aka Self-Esteem.
I loved that.
She is the boom boom gun.
I know, it's true. There's so many applicable sentences, it's actually wild.
So today we're talking about RuPaul's Drag Race. What made you pick this show?
Oh, I mean, I actually did feel no guilt about anything. So when someone suggests that, you know, what's my guilty pleasure or pop culture, I'm like, I can't say, I'm just not guilty. So I just thought, what can I talk about for ages? So I picked it. But yeah, it's truly changed completely and utterly my life. And made me who I am, the artist I am today, gave me strength. It's like a religion to me. It really like found me when I really needed it. And it's just so, even when it's shit, I love it. And I don't know, I'm just so thankful.
I honestly could not agree with this sentiment more. When did you start watching this show?
So in 2012, I always have an abusive boyfriend around the Olympics, so I'm a bit nervous at the moment. But I had my 2012 abusive boyfriend, and when he, you know, it was a real classic, mind games, gaslight, am I going crazy, crying in public all the time, you know, the classics, cheated on me with someone I work with, the huge. So I was but yeah, I'm really thankful to it because it actually set me on the path I'm on today, which I like, I have a great life now. So, but yeah, I had to go move back to my mum and dad's because I was so mentally unstable, and just laid in bed for a few weeks and just did the usual, like couldn't eat anything. I was just so gone, far gone. And, I just popped it on. Netflix was like relatively new, I guess, and I just thought, oh, that might be look silly. And I used to be an America's Next Top Model head, so I was a bit like, hopefully it'll fill that void, which last time I'd been very depressed, I filled it with America's Next Top Model. So, and lo and behold, not only did it do that, but there is something about the fact that I'm going to say sort of broad things. I know there's like drag kings and things like that, but as it currently stands, I cannot compete on it. So it means I watch it truly as a viewer rather, like I can't watch Bake Off without being like, I could bake that well. Or like even America's Next Top Model, even though I'm not a model, I used to be like imagining what I'd do in it, or can't watch Strictly. I'm just like so jack of all tradesy that I find entertainment TV, even Love Island. I'm like, I'd go on Love Island. I'm 34 and I'm like, do not have the body, but I still think like, I could go on Love Island. Like, I get true relaxation from Drag Race, and it made that miserable time in my life, this kind of, everything was terrible and waking up was just hell, but at least there was that to do, and it made, you know, it really set me on a recovery in that, even in that instance. But then I can really like wax lyrical about how it's changed my mindset about myself as well, if you want.
Well, I can certainly join you in that waxing. Like, I feel so aligned with you. I came to the show at around the same time, and I didn't have an abusive boyfriend, but I did have a relationship that was failing slowly, you know, and we just kind of were falling out of love with one another. And during that time, it was very much, you know, he'd be watching TV in the living room and I'd be watching TV in the bedroom, and this is what I'd watch. Yeah. And like, there's definitely, if you're in a bad place when you're watching the show, particularly those early seasons before they really found the formula and it was really very earnest. And, you know, I remember so much, I think it was season one or two, but the first time RuPaul said to the queens, you know, anyone who puts on heels every day and goes outside is my hero. And I remember just bursting into tears. And like there's a real sense when you're watching the show as well of like, if you're stuck in a life that you don't like, of being, there's a whole other life out there.
Absolutely. And like, I mean, there's tons of things, but I was in a band at the time, and yeah, I've talked about this a lot in press and things like that, but like, I'd been in that band since I was 17. It was me and another guy. It was very much a collaboration, but increasingly I became somebody very different. But we were still sort of making the same kind of thing. And I had become this kind of monster, basically, of confidence and like creativity and desire, and like everything about me was too much for every scenario I was in. So Drag Race, it was like the first time in a long time I'd seen just like being too much, for want of a better fucking phrase, celebrated. And not only that, you would win. And it was so like exciting to me that every corner I turned around that time in my life was like, yeah, any relationships I was in, it was, you know, it was what people are attracted to in me, and then it's ultimately what they don't like about me. The band, it felt like that, you know, everything I did, every step of every day was, I felt like a great big enormous alien horse freak. And
alien horse,
yeah, I don't know why I said that, but I did. It was
beautiful. Like, it really chimes with me in my worldview.
But now obviously I'm celebrating the fact that I'm a great big alien horse, and people who come and see my shows are also big alien horses too, and it's like, oh cool, found my tribe, all that sort of thing. And but it was completely like not something I knew existed before I watched a TV show about Drag Race, about drag queens. Like, until I saw that, and the community, the way confidence is not a bad thing, self-love, and then on the other side of it, like the performance style, the band I used to be in was very like acoustic guitars. I put a dress on. I couldn't be loud, really. I had to be sort of pixie dream girl, which also I've never been that. I've always been faking it. So to sort of see such femininity and such sexuality be so sort of widescreen and a technicolor just really excited me. Like a 3-year-old watching like The Shapes moving, I'm like, oh, like, it was just so inspiring. And honestly, like how I got the courage to go solo and do what I'm doing now.
Oh, I just love hearing you say that, because it not only is it very inspiring, my nipples are very pointed right now just listening to this. But like, you know, I contacted you on Instagram, and I have been a fan of your music for a really long time. And the band you were in, Slow Club, when I was kind of learning guitar and in bands myself, that was a record, particularly your first one, that I listened to every day and really saw myself in, being like, oh, that's the kind of thing I want to do. And she's really doing it and all this. And I really loved that record. And then it was so interesting to, you know, kind of move on with my life or whatever, and go on to different stages of life and sort of forget about it, and then just be on my Spotify playlist one day and hearing Girl Crush come on just like a recommend. And I was like, there's something about this that I know already, and googling it and being like, oh my god, it's Slow Club Girl.
I love it when that happens.
And it was so invigorating, because it was like we'd both gone on similar journeys, as far as I could tell anyway, in that it was like, oh, in the kind of early noughties, she was wearing the kind of Topshop little dresses and the side fringe and having like clever lyrics about falling in love and, you know, oh, don't notice me kind of thing. And then when I see you now and you're there with this like loud, queer pop music with like, and these formations that you, your dance moves and like even the Prioritized Pleasure video, which I would love for everyone to go look up. It's you in this menswear look with all of your dancers around you. And the way you guys are choreographed is like a final challenge on Drag Race. It's like Final Four. It's like Read You Wrote You.
It really is, isn't it? Like, I'm learning it. When I learn the choreo, it is like those like awful montages they do of them learning choreography. And it, the edit for me would be very much that I'm struggling, but then on the day I get it, like every time. Yeah, I have a very wonderful, very gay choreographer who knows.
Is it Todrick Hall?
He's the UK white Todrick Hall of theatre. Yes, he's amazing, Stuart. But yeah, I love it when I hear that. Like people that did know Slow Club who now, I think we all went through a similar thing. Not as generalising massively, but like, don't know about you, but I was like, didn't know about feminism. I actually just didn't think about it, really. And my life consisted of like trying to be hot, trying to be funny, trying to be cool, trying to make the boy. All my life was just surrounded by boys who make the music with me, trying to make them like me, trying to get off with other ones. And like, just a real, like, so deeply not who I am. And like, obviously, I'm not straight and things like that. And I just had to shut it all down. And now when I look back, I'm like, oh God, no wonder I mean, it's been so poorly all the time. And my mental health was absolutely horrendous. And I'm like, oh, no wonder you were literally like cast on a show that wasn't, you've been acting since you left school. Do you know what I mean? Like it's so exhausting and debilitating. And so, yeah, what I'm saying now is like there's women I know that liked Slow Club and there's women now that like Self Esteem that have been through the same journey of like, hang on a minute, this isn't me, hang on a minute, oh fuck this. I went through a very big like fucking angry feminist phase which is quite exclusionary. Now I'm on like whatever wave I personally am on where I'm like, things are inherent to me, it make complete sense to me, but my wiring, because I was born in 86, my wiring is still a little bit like, I get aftershocks of my previous misogyny. Yeah. And but I find them very kind of exciting and intriguing now and really probe them. And yeah, now I'm just realizing this, like, there's Gen Z and there's like armpit hair and chin hair and whatever and body positivity, and then there's like, you know, people who I maybe went to school with or whatever, like married with kids and would think I'm very alarming. And then I'm somewhere in the middle where it's like trying to rid myself of the inherent bullshit, patriarchal bullshit that just by growing, being born in the 80s gives you. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know, Drag Race really helped. Something about the gender fucking, it just really helped me just be take everything less seriously. I felt like I'm not very good at it, or I feel bad for feeling certain things still. And I'm like, no, I'm exploring my own change from being, you know, from Rotherham and born in 86 and thinking, oh, if I just get a husband and have a baby, everything will be fine, to what I actually am, which is like, I don't give a shit about any of that.
I think it's really interesting because the sort of feminist critique that Drag Race and drag queens often get is that they're taking female beauty stereotypes and upholding them. And there's definitely a kind of lens you could look at Drag Race and be like, this focus on like tiny waists and hourglass figures and like, you know, perfect femininity is, you know, upholding these quite damaging stereotypes. And there can be like quite a misogynistic air around drag that some women find very off-putting. But for me personally and my kind of journey with my own gender identity, I feel like watching this show made me realize more than anything that like gender is a performance that you can choose to do or not do or alter day to day. And so like I feel like when I was pre-watching this show, I was very much in a slow club uniform. I was like in a, you know, like nice cute little dress from Topshop, something to cover my arms always, and like straightened hair and a fringe, and like it didn't matter to me. I'm not trying to insult that look at all.
It's so funny.
It's the noughties look, yeah. Right? The indie girl noughties look. And it never occurred to me about whether I was happy about that look or whether it expressed who I was. It was just safe and pretty and, you know, everyone liked it enough. Mm-hmm. And then to having gone through this show and also discovering more about gender identity generally through the avenues this show opened up for me in my head and through literature and music and everything, it made me like, oh, today I can dress like a hot, dumb Barbie bitch. And tomorrow I'm going to wear a fucking suit. Mm-hmm. And like it sounds so stupid and small, but it really did. I find it very freeing, this idea of gender as performance.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. And I've struggled my whole life because I'm quite masculine, obviously. But then I'm built very, very fucking female. Like, I have massive knockers, massive arms, small waist. I'm blonde. And I've always rejected that side of myself. Actively found it very embarrassing. I never really had fun with clothing or anything, and yet every night I'd be standing on a stage with lights on me. Like, used to really, it was like a whole part of it that I had to ignore. And the uniform thing, you're so right. It was this very, I don't know about for you, but like, it's just this like post Amelie bullshit world where I think I was so desperate for someone to want me to be their girlfriend that and I just assumed these male written, you know, pixie dream bitch, Zooey Deschanel vibe sort of thing. Like, if at the more I can be like that, the more likely it is someone somewhere will pick me to be
see something in me.
Well, that's what I like. Even saying that now is kind of embarrassing to admit, but that's how I lived my whole 20s. It was never what I might want to pick. and also, which is just completely mind-blowing to me now. But yeah, performance, gender as a performance is like so fucking refreshing, isn't it? Like, it actually unlocks so much for all of us. And not even getting into chatting about sort of a non-binary identity or anything. Like, just generally as a woman in the world, you're plagued by the way you're sexualized every day of your fucking life. But the way I enjoy my sexuality and then the way I'm chastised for enjoying it is like something I'm trying to do in self-esteem very much, is like, fuck off. Like, I get to enjoy myself for me, and it's very fun. And I need to unpick why it's very fun to like have massive hair and loads of makeup and put the most ridiculous outfit on ever and have photos taken for things in it, which is what I do now. I don't know why it's fun. It just is. So I'm going to do it. It's not for you. It's for me to have a great time. I just...
Yeah.
But I knew I'd come... You know, I do like loads of like naked stuff and I get people going, why do you feel the need to do this? And I'm like, I actually don't have an answer for you, honey. it's really fun. And like, I guess I feel most comfortable when I'm enjoying myself. So, I don't know. I've lost it here, but...
No, it's beautiful and it's so true. And you're right. It's like, the thing, oh, because I want to should really be... Mm-hmm. That's it. There really is no definition in using your body like that in your work. And it's the kind of work that you do is just so... This new breed of pop star... That is so exciting to me. That, like, it's so... To me, it's, like, very cerebral and intellectual because your lyrics and your rhymes are so complicated and so well-written and everything. But the bangers... The beat is massive and, like, the clothes are amazing. And it's... I don't know. I'm sorry. I could gush all day. I'm not going to, because I'm here to talk about drag queens. But I think, as well, this show has taught me so much. And one of the things... has really been pronoun flexibility, mm-hmm. as well. Like, I remember when I first started telling people about this show and being like, oh, you know, Bob the drag queen and she's this and she's mm-hmm. that and she's the mm-hmm. other. And it never, and because the show like brings you into this world where you're looking at these, you know, for I would say for 70% of every episode, they're not in drag, mm-hmm. right? They're in the workroom or they're in the talking heads, but there's not a doubt in your mind that that's she. Like, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, and because, you know, it's... It's weird because when I started watching this show, I don't think I was very informed about trans identities at all. I'm not past the bare minimum of like knowing who Laverne Cox was, you know, but like I feel like having it, it really taught me about that flexibility and about how outward image and what we think of as male presenting, what we think of as female presenting are just, it's all just so elastic and it's been extremely freeing for me.
Yeah, and it's very tough, isn't it? It's very wide. There's a lot to learn still, always. But the fact that there's something that's so accessible, that's kind of Trojan horses in, a way to educate people about how fluid gender is and how much it would improve society if it was just completely understood and second nature that gender isn't really real. Like, they're like, yeah. There's so much could be solved with it. And it's early fucking days still in it. But yeah, I same here. Like, I came out, I guess, 2013, 2014. And I didn't really realise myself. I mean, I slept with women and not thought maybe that's a thing. I just sort of, I was in a band since 16. I was like, I've done all sorts of shit. But yeah, it just got stronger. And I fell in love with someone. So it was like very, oh, okay, this is me now. And it did not scare me or plague me. I was just inhabiting this community via watching this show every day of my goddamn life. That I just didn't. It didn't seem ridiculous or scary at all to realise that about myself. And of course it isn't, but there was still, you know, it was still a hot chat. I was still on Facebook at the time, and I'm only on Facebook with people from school, and it was definitely like a guess what moment still. And I was like, really? Are you... Oh, wow, it's still news. But yeah, just... This is why I'm very much in my bubble and live my life in my way and very rarely come up against people with like very different opinions to me. But when it's just sobering when you realise how much education needs to happen.
We talked at the beginning of the podcast, or you said that you don't really believe in guilty pleasures. And like, yeah, that can be like a very like irritating term. I do realize that. But I think there's an interesting thing with Drag Race in particular, in that like it's not a guilty pleasure because it's this global phenomenon, right? And it's like powered this entire drag industry, that, and like it's put drag at the forefront of the culture in this really exciting way. So there's nothing like kind of guilty about it. But the thing that I sometimes feel guilty about is not that I watch it, it's more how into it I am. And I'm so wary of like, oh, I'm another cis woman who like watches Trixie and Katya and like goes to K-pop, you know what I mean? And like, there's something, because like people who watch this show, there's a class of person who watches this show the same way you might watch like Top Chef or Love Island or whatever, who are like, yeah, I watch the reality show and I want to see who wins and then I switch myself off. But like, really, there's never a day when I'm not thinking about these queens. Like, they're like my Marvel universe. I'm like I follow them all on Instagram. I want to know like how their one woman show is going. I want to know like how their new skincare line is going. It the show isn't embarrassing, but the level of investment I have in it is.
Actually, yeah, I will agree with that. I go on the Reddit, Caroline. Like, love to chill. Like, of an evening, I love to smoke, go on the Reddit, just slowly. But for me, I am embarrassed by it, and I've even commented before, but I just find it so, like I said before, it's so deeply relaxing to me because it's so far from, it just doesn't stress me out. And I can't watch a good film without thinking, ugh, I wish I'd done the music for this. Like my life, I'm adult, I'm like a bit of an arsehole. Like it takes me ages to listen to new music that I know I'll love because I'll just be jealous. Like, and it's a real flaw of mine. And because there is so much sort of media, so much you can consume now, like, it is, it's kind of a crappy part of me that I can avoid. I don't follow things. I only follow drag queens, and I only follow, you know, things that don't really mean anything to my actual daily life, which you could say drag doesn't, but it's so relaxing to me. I'm so fucking fond of them. Like, people make me laugh so much. I'm Trixie, I've had sexual dreams about.
Trixie as like a boy or Trixie both. As in drag? Both. Wow.
Yeah. More than okay. once. Okay.
Do you want to know who I've had a sex dream about?
That's my best ever though.
Manila Luzon.
As boy.
There is this bit in the All Stars that she competed on,
yeah,
where when she's in her boy drag, she wears like a pilot's uniform, and yeah. I find it really erotic.
I know, it's so, but I love that. And also, look, I only date men that look like women anyway. Like, I'm very female leaning across the board. So, to have sex dreams about drag queens is not that crazy. But but it is I love you saying it's embarrassing how into it you are, because I am, and I'm coming out now, and I'm being honest about it. I go on that Reddit. I love to know. Oh, do you know what I love is when any of them date each other. Ugh, that's my favorite thing in the world. It doesn't happen often, but if there's any rumors about that, I will Google about it. But then also, other flip side. As I go into, so I'm touring in November, and, you know, I'm now in a situation where I can be like, oh, for this show, I want to do this look. And like I said before, the idea that I would plan a look in my old band is ludicrous. Like, that was just, like, not the done thing. And now there's this whole other facet of what I do. So there's music, obviously, that speaks for itself. There's what I do when I'm performing, but also there's a whole other canvas, which is what we wear. And, plotting looks is just like my new joy, and I get so much out of Drag Race to sort of reference. Like, it feels like anything is possible. Like, I've done it before. Like, I in Slow Club, actually, we had a big gig, and I had a dress made out of Sheffield Wednesday material.
So, oh, amazing.
Yeah, because I won
my brother's team.
Oh, really? That's funny. So, like, Ozzy the Owl, who is this great big, you know, man in a suit at the thing, has this huge, he has a huge kit on, basically. So they've sent me one of Ozzy the Owl's kits, so because it was, like, such a vast amount of the material that we could make a dress with it. And, like, I loved doing that. And then it's all, like, that's pretty fucking, like, camp way to show that I'm from Sheffield, which was what was my intention, I guess. And then, you know, and cut to now, I do it every time I possibly can. The Boots Advantage Cottage dress, I don't know if you know about that.
No, I don't know.
I had a
drag.
Well, yeah, I didn't kind of put two and two together until about now, really, that I had my, you know, my first very big London show, sellout show. It was a bit like, what are you going to wear? And to me, then nothing represents wealth more than, or like mental health and wealth, which is having an Advantage card that you use and you keep going with. Do you know? Do you have one? Because I've
oh
had
my God.
So many.
Yeah.
And they all just go. I'm completely
useless. I
once
made a £60 purchase with my Boots Advantage card.
Oh!
And I felt like I owned 51% of that.
Yes!
Company, like.
That's thriving. I can't imagine ever being able to do that because I lose them all. So I've toyed with this idea for ages about making something to do with the fact that clarity and sort of mental stability for me would be to have a Boots Advantage card for that I get points. Because I also spend like so many thousands of pounds in Boots all the time as well. So it was that Amex dress I was ripping off, which was like the gold dress made out of gold cards. I was like that, but a Boots Advantage card. And then like that, obviously you wouldn't get all that from, you wouldn't get the backstory or context, but the context is so important to me in everything I do.
Yeah, it's that is such a drag. The when you were just talking about that whole the key to mental health is having a full Boots Advantage card. I could see you like doing a talking head while you're going down the runway on the main stage, being like, girl.
Yeah. I would be, oh my God, imagine. But yeah, basically that show gives me an outlet to just sort of normalize doing stuff like that. But it's nobody's fault. But I spent my whole 20s feeling very, very much like I can't have ideas and say them, or it's too much hassle to do them, or it's stupid. And every day in my life, I wake up now and I can have a thought, put it into something, vocalize it, and I have a manager that is so like, yeah, let's do it, rather than like, that'll be difficult and this is why. And it's just, yeah, the, you know, I used to wake up every day feeling like, ugh, here we go again. Whereas I wake up now like, oh, what's today going to be like? And it's the best thing that's ever happened to me, do you know what I mean? And not to completely, you know, all the therapy has probably helped with that. But Drag Race, and just the, something else about it as well is, for me, I've been a musician my whole life, and it's always felt like this mad struggle. Obviously, you don't make much money, and the sacrifices that you have to make in order to do this for a living are kind of, you know, I have no, all my relationships fail, I'm always leaving, I never get to live anywhere for long, no pension, no stability, loads of sleeping in shit hotels, floors, but, you know, all that kind of stuff. But what it's like worth it for is to be able to make my art and have someone listen, and like that pays all of that off, kind of thing. But the way that the drag queens, I don't know if you know, Alaska does like, we'll just decide to do like one show that's just blackout Britney Spears album.
Yes, and she's doing a Lady Gaga Joanne one at the moment, isn't she? Yeah.
So that as an idea to me, as a concept, to go like, right, I'm going to put the show on and this is what it's going to be. And just committing to that bit and doing it. There's something about the way drag queens can just decide to do something and they do it. And there'll be an audience because of who they are. And they pull it together and they make it work. Whereas in my world, it's always such a sort of slog. You have to decide what it is. It's this whole tour. You do the same every night. You can't deviate. Everyone has to, you know, rehearsal. You can't afford to just try things. Or certainly I don't. But so there's something soothing to me about the way drag outside of the show works, and that it's a lot less, it can be so sort of raw and improvised and just going for it off the bat. Something about that really makes me excited about my future and what I might do. Because, yeah, I'm still just doing gigs that are very rehearsed. But, like, I love the idea. I want to do, like, a cabaret show or, like, a show songs tour or something. And it's, like, all of, you know, watching what the queens do makes me think, yeah, why not? Why can't I do that? There's something so structured about, like, indie music or whatever you want to call it, that the show helps me think about smashing down.
I fucking love that. Like, for today, you picked season 6 as being your area of focus. I want to know why you picked season 6 and who your, like, main queens are from that season.
Well, it was the first one I watched, so I think it's that. I think it was really, like, gobsmacking to me. I remember even the way, the language, I think there was still the Interior Illusions Lounge at that point. I just think that was so fucking funny. Now it kind of gloss over it because it's so ingrained. But when I first watched it, the way that RuPaul would play with like the seriousness of and the drama, was doing like straight faced, but it's so ridiculous. Something about that just fucking tickled me. So yeah, and Adore Delano, I was like very, very attracted to and very in love with. And still am. And then the whole, I'm just such a sucker for a baddie come goodie kind of. So that, I just don't think the show's ever been better than when Bianca Del Rio helps with her.
Yes, helped Adore Delano with her hog body.
Yeah. I mean, and even that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Yeah, calling yourself a hog body is like so fucking funny and so relatable, and I've just never seen it. It was something, how sort of comfortable in themselves everyone is, just rocked my fucking world. But yeah, but and then obviously Bianca Del Rio being just very, very like, you know, could be on any stand-up show funny. Yeah, I think that really helped. I think it sort of suffered that I don't think people, there's not been many queens that are that like piss funny since, but there are, but like, do you know what I mean?
There are just, when I was rewatching it the last couple of days, which has been such a joy, the cast is just incredible.
Yeah. Like,
Bianca Del Rio, Adore Delano, and Courtney Act is the top three. But then I was oh my God, there's so many like characters. Even like Jocelyn Fox, I think, makes me piss myself.
Yeah.
So womp.
Yeah. She is my favourite queen. When people say, who's your favourite queen? I say Trixie and Jocelyn Fox. There's something so unbelievably adorable about her. And also, just the way she kind of shows up and just is involved. Just so unfazed, even though like she's kind of not... There's something about her that isn't like, I am fierce and I'm going to win. She's kind of got this awareness that she's maybe not the best one in there, but she's so sweet. Present and just having a good time. There's something about her I just can't get enough of. I love her.
It's so funny because she's painted in the show as being this like fairly junior queen from Worcester in Massachusetts, which obviously isn't known for its drag community.
Yeah.
And this kind of, the sort of the structuring of the season. And I, as a novelist, I love looking at reality show that's so well structured and well edited and pinned together that it almost flows like a novel because there are these like character archetypes that are being fulfilled. And everyone, when you're thinking about the top six of this season or top seven, everyone has like a yin and a yang. So you have Courtney Act and Jocelyn Fox. Like they're kind of, they do a similar kind of fishy, sexy thing, but like, Courtney is really hot. It's like she's quite hard to get to know because she's so perfect. And then Jocelyn on the other side is so instantly lovable and you're just so into her, but they've got this kind of like big sister, little sister kind of thing. And it's so great. And then you have like the first half of the season, Bianca Del Rio and Trinity K. Bonet. Like, and that there's this like iconic, untucked kind of quote that's just like, name, let me ask you a very fair question. What's one thing you do successfully? Sort of slightly bullying but also very nurturing relationship.
Yeah.
And like everybody has that sort of point and counterpoint. But what I love about Jocelyn Fox is like, even though she's being painted as someone who's kind of naive and she is a little bit ditzy, her lines are always straight on point. She's so funny. Like the thing that always, my favorite episode of that whole season is when they have to interview Cher's mom and Chaz Bono, Cher's son, and Jocelyn Fox is like, the line is something like, if it weren't for a last minute decision at the abortion clinic, we never would have got Cher.
So horrendous. Fucking amazing though. Oh my God. But like, so not fazed.
You've come out twice since coming out of Cher.
Genius! I'm like not upset that that was obviously like pretty hardcore, like just like, oh, what? I don't know. I just love her sort of blissful ignorance. It's just delightful. Oh, I love it so much.
And she's just wearing like six necklaces and lingerie on the main stage, and she's like, I like it.
Do you listen to Race Chaser?
I do, religiously.
Yeah, me too. I'm obsessed. And they did the necklace dinger every time she wears it. They've been tallying up. So good. So good. You could do that with me with my, there's this like black jacket that...
I've seen.
If self-esteem's doing something, I've got that on. Because if I'm like, I'll try something else and then I'm like, I don't like what I look like. And then I'm just like, hoik that thing back on me. All faithful.
I can imagine the smell coming off that jacket at this point. Oh, yeah. So many performances.
Yeah, we actually were just WhatsApping in the group with the girls. I was like, everyone needs to take their suits home after tomorrow and give it a wash. Because we can't be this like absolute fire sexy band and waft.
Absolutely
stench off the stage. Although, yeah, we can. It's very self-esteem.
It's very Adore Delano refusing to wash her tights.
Yeah.
Imagine what that workroom smells like.
Oh my god. Oh, and La Ganja. Oh my god.
La Ganja is such a trajectory, isn't it?
Yeah.
For the listeners who might not know, tell us about La Ganja Estranja.
On the show, like, extremely, like, frustrating and annoying. And it's one of those things I notice a lot in reality shows there where they, obviously in the edit, they're trying to make a kind of, like, they're forcing that through, and you only see this very like extroverted, loud side of her that can be grating or whatever. And then like now, she's so fucking respected, and like all the language she uses that in season six could have been called annoying is actually what's been like completely appropriated over and over and over again, and like embedded in lexicon of just everyone now. And you're like, she did that. And now it's like their main, you know, the show uses shit she says as their taglines for stuff. And like, she's an absolute icon hero now. I can't remember when I watched it, whether I found it frustrating. I don't think I did. I thought it was just like fascinating. Yeah, it's just... Do you know what I mean? They kind of how they... The villains get... Ultimately end up being very celebrated because they're the best bit.
It's so true. And that's such a part of what drag culture is about as well. Like, there's always this thing with drag. Like, the most villainous sort of creature in a film. Like, whether it's, you know, Mommy Dearest or Norma Desmond or like all these like outsized like big female personalities that are sort of villainous, they always get celebrated by drag. And so the great thing about Drag Race is that even when somebody is like has that sort of performance on the show or that kind of edit, they also become celebrated in their own way. Like, there's really no, very few bad outcomes, you know. And it's also this thing of like, I find the bulk of reality TV like quite sad, just because like there's always this thing with like, for example, The X Factor, where it's like, you know, most of them don't have great careers, and a lot of them have quite awful and embarrassing careers, you know, where they're sort of like singing covers at sort of, you know, very tiny local theaters that don't sell out or whatever. But because everyone who competes on this show is an artist. Like, they're not a singer or an actor. They are an artist who constructs entire shows and entire brands around themselves. You don't really have to worry about anyone that much.
Mm, mm-hmm.
You kind of do worry because the social media aspect of it can make life quite miserable for them.
Yeah.
But like, you're like, oh, and that's why for me it always feels like the queer Marvel universe, because you can follow each one. You can have your favorites. Everybody has a trajectory you can follow forever, you know?
Yeah. That's so true. That's what make, yeah, I mean, aside from the like terrible social media stuff, the like, it can do nothing but sort of help what they would be doing anyway. You know what I mean? Like, they would be doing their shows anyway, they would be performing. Like, there's so much drag that isn't on Drag Race that's successful. And then, yeah, it's almost like just a like showcase. I'm always kind of shocked when, like, the All-Stars at the minute, like, it's very like, I waited all this time to get back on this show, and I think it's still for some of them such a kind of obsession to win it, whereas if I was on it, I would just be like, oh cool, this is just a way to like showcase myself, and then I'll carry on with doing what I'm doing with hopefully like some more people coming, because as soon as you're on the telly at all, things, like even when I've done tiny telly things, like you're suddenly like, you know, influx of people coming to look at what you're doing. And so yeah, I think like that, but I guess when you're in it, it must just be so all consuming to want to win.
Yeah, that is another one of the lovely things about the show, is that winning is not really the point. Like within the confines of like, oh, we have to care about this reality show, it's always like, well, mama, you know I'm here to snatch the crown. All this kind of stuff. But we all kind of know it's a bit of a wink, and that the point really is exposure and getting your name out there and being able to tour afterwards. And like so many of the queens do say that the real Drag Race begins after the show.
Yeah.
But like, I'm just looking at this cast list again, and like, the amount of like iconic performers who didn't even last that long on this season, but who I still know about today, like Milk, for God's sake.
Oh, wow. So hot.
If you're looking for a dude or in a preggers mood.
Oh, I'll never unhear that horrible word use. It's not even a word.
You're looking for a dude or in a preggers mood.
It's so gross. Oh, my God. I loved Milk, though. I think that, like, oh my God. No, She Better Don't, I think, is my favourite episode. I think I must have watched that one the most ever. Oh.
It definitely has so many like lines from that episode that still run in my head. Like, my name's Adele, I don't have to force it. You're my brand new corset.
She's so hot in that as well. And I always think, they always say that Trinity is not on beat, but she is. And this is what, if I ever got to speak to anybody, if I ever met Michelle Visage, I'd be like, I just want you to know that she is on beat. Maybe I should post on Reddit. Maybe I will. Depends
Can
on
you
how
do
long.
Trinity's rap?
No, I can't. Just take a second to see how it goes. Rhinestones.
It's that bit is always lodged in my head. Let's take a second to see how it goes, the way she kind of stumbles on it.
But I think it works. It's a really chill delivery. It's the kind of rap I like when it's not like da 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 da. Look at me dying on this hill. But yeah, I often think about that. It's not fair. But that's the downside of the show, and you see it more and more now, is the like producers' involvement in like who they want to go and what they want to happen next, because it has kind of ruined the fun. And I will still watch every single bit of it and every franchise, and I will never ever tire of it. But I think that season 6 is like when it had like some more budget, it had some very very talented people on it, and the format was not yet quite so heavy-handed. So it's just glorious. My best friend won't watch it, and she's, you know, we're both telly addicts, so I'm like, there is so, like, nothing we love more than to, like, waste a day by going, I'm just going to get through this today, I'm just going to watch telly all day, like, but yeah, it has to be worth it. Like, if you're watching telly that isn't good enough to waste a day on, it can get quite depressing, but if it's good enough, it feels fine. So I'm like, you have hours upon hours of television that will feel like you won't have to feel guilty about. She just won't watch it, but I'm like, just season 6, just put it on. Big opening.
It's RuPaul's such a big perfect opening. Season. Yeah, RuPaul's big opening. Because it's this perfect thing of like, they know what the show is now, they know the format, they know the stakes, everybody there is like, knows what they're fighting for, but the show isn't so big that people are afraid of coming off bitchy or afraid of being assassinated on social media. So people are so cunty to each other. Like, Bianca, Adore, Darian, and Courtney are just so cunty. It's so good.
It's so funny. I met Courtney at the GAY Awards, and I did not keep my cool. And I was like, I mean, I was very drunk by this point, but I was like, thank you so much for what you do. And I got this selfie where she obviously looks unbelievable, and I'm not at my best, shall we say. But even like like, it's incredible the amount of work that goes into looking like that as well. Like, it's so, that's commendable enough. And then they have to do all this crazy stuff. At the moment, trying to do my live show, I'm like, you know, it's really like not a problem at all, but it's quite like trying to do the choreo, not look like dog rough, sweaty mess doing it, trying to figure out what we're wearing for each one, making sure everyone's, even like making sure the suits aren't stinking, trying to get like all these things. And then on top of that, I'm like playing instruments and things like that. And it's like, there's a lot to sort out and I can't just rock up and play a gig anymore. Like I used to with, you know, just pull up with my guitar, plug it in and go. I didn't even have to worry about anything else, really. How hard the show is to put on now, you know, I absolutely love and I absolutely made it that this is my life and it's all my fault. But it's like a lot, you know, and I, when I could be phoning it in, you know, a lot of other people in bands phone it in compared to like what we're trying to do. And I'm like, just the mad respect for like what drag is and how much, like, how expensive it is, how much effort it takes, the time it takes, how exhausting it is, how painful it is to deliver what it is at all. Like, there's something I'm not very eloquent on, but like it makes it worth it. Like the act of how difficult it is to do makes it worth it. And I'm really like a bit of a pervert for that feeling now. I'm like, I want this to be tough and difficult and overwhelming. So at the end of the night, you know, I actually, when I was still in Slow Club, I was very sure I needed to go and do this. I used to listen to What's the Tea podcast. I don't know if you...
Oh, I remember it, yeah. It was the
most inconsistent podcast ever. Like, sometimes it was just them talking about health food, and sometimes it was, like, world-changing.
Yeah, it was so true. So, but I would listen to every single one, and there's the Bianca Del Rio one. Like, is a really sort of defining moment. I was in my kitchen, and I was, like, just doing something really mundane. I'm feeling really ugh, and Bianca was talking about how Joan Rivers had said to her, like, if you get to the end of the day and you can just fall like dead asleep because of how hard you've worked all day, like, that's a good day. That's her. Oh. That was Joan Rivers' goal in life, was to never go to bed not completely like bone tired. And my life at the time was very like, I was just waiting all the time because I had no other outlet, so I had to just wait to do Slow Club commitments, and anything else I just didn't, there was no point in doing it because I couldn't do it. So I was almost like fucking bored shitless most of the time, and never bone tired, always just like, ugh, you know. And from there came loads of bad habits and loads of sort of misbehaving and doing something to just try and fill my day. And like, it just really made sense to me that like the people I look up to, the people I like, the stuff I like to consume, people are working fucking hard, and that's actually what makes me very happy. But so it was a real once I was self-esteem and it was up to me, I was the boss and I created the work. I mean, I've never stopped, you know, and I'm so much happier for it.
I think that's what I find so amazing about your music in particular, is that whenever I look at a performance of yours, it's always just like, this is so much more complicated than it needs to be. You're putting in more than, like, do you know what I mean? You have the songs, you have the lyrics. There are plenty of artists who would kind of just stand there and deliver the song or whatever. There are, I can think of like a dozen just off the top of my head that I'm not going to name because we're not that kind of podcast. but who could just stand there, and like the fact that everything is so ornate and so thought out and so draggy, like, it really is. And it's the same thing with these queens, where it's like they're doing something that's uncomfortable and difficult, and it has so many moving parts and so many people that you need to get involved. And the reason they're doing it is not so much vanity, is just commitment to showmanship. And I find that so moving. Like, I'm someone who doesn't, I don't cry in my real life. I don't cry when people I know like die or anything. But the things that make me cry is that when something is just really well done and someone's like acting to the best of their abilities. Mm-hmm. And it just, I find that so moving.
Yeah. Because of why else be alive? Like, it really bugged me that I would tour and tour and tour, and there was stage and lights and PA, but it wasn't being used to its full capacity. And then when I think of myself as like a little girl, like even like the edge of a rug would be like the proscenium of a stage in my mind, and I would dance to that, you know. Like, it was all I wanted to do when I was little. Fun for me was shows, putting shows on, making dancing dances up, making songs up. And then I'd find, and I was living this life where I'd, oh, I'm a musician full time, I make my living out of it, but not able to indulge myself in any of those childhood dreams, none of the benefits for me were sort of taken advantage of. And now I get to, and you know what, like, sometimes I'm like, oh, I wish I was younger when I did it or whatever, but that's my other thing now. And the other thing drag helps me with is, like, it's not just for people under 25, and it's kind of vital that it isn't as well. And yeah, I just get so much validation and, like, strength from how that exists and how it's revered. And I, like, it's fucking cool as well. Like, there's nothing cooler.
Cool.
Drag queens are more punk than any of the, like, bullshit punk men I know. Sorry, go on.
Love to know the punk men you know.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, so many, and they're so not, like, actually committed to it. Like a drag queen does. Go on, sorry.
It's so nice to just talk about, like, the raw love of this show, because I certainly feel like, and I've got a few friends who do drag and that kind of thing, and that there has been a sort of backlash to it in recent years of people who are like, it's like dominated the conversation around drag, and this thing that was niche has now become universal and family friendly. And, like, I remember there is a person I know who I'm not friends with, who sort of, like, we were all out together and they overheard me and my friend who does drag. It was that season with Mercedes and Man Diamond, and we were doing that opulence thing, and we were just, like, getting our life and having the crack.
Yeah, yeah.
And they just sort of leaned over and they were like, can we not do the Drag Race thing? I get enough of this in the club. And it was so haughty. And we were just a bit like, oh, fuck off, you know? Come on, old lady.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, there are lots of people who are going to watch this show and then not be interested in drag. But a lot of people also will find this art form. Like, you have, and I have, and other people have, like, and just be like, oh, this speaks to me in such a deep way. And I feel like I've really found a community here, you know?
Yeah. I think, like, I can understand the argument. Against it, and it's so multifactorial and there's so much going on, but for me, with any of this kind of stuff, I'm like, the battle is so far from being won, and there's just every little helps, I think. So if, like, yeah, it's not the most amazing representation of every facet of queer gender expression, but it is something. So where there was once nothing. So I don't know. I'm also not a drag queen, so I don't know how damaging it is. But as a queer person who's felt underrepresented, any kind of, even, like, you know, like, if there's any slightly lesbian movie, even if it's shit, I'm like, thank you. For this,
just Carrie Mulligan in a bonnet picking up rocks with Kate Winslet or whatever.
I'm like, wow, so brave. No, but it's like, yeah, I mean, that's just my point about any of it. Same with, like, fucking feminist filmmaking. Like, I hated Promising Young Woman, but I was like, but at least it's existing, and, like, we'll get there in the end.
I hate it too, but for different reasons.
Oh, why?
Mainly because my first novel was called Promising Young Women.
Oh, fuck.
And I met with that production company, and then they went and released that movie, and I was like, that's a weird move.
Oh, my God.
Now I can never adapt my own book. But also, lots of people have bought my book because of the movie.
Oh, cool. So, and they get a better story than that. Yeah.
It swings and roundabouts.
Yeah,
but I won't watch it because it just makes me really pissed off.
Well, babe, you're not missing anything. It's just very Tarantino-ized version of Woman on Revenge, which I'm just so. I don't want to sound like an old fuddy-duddy, but, like, and I am grateful that, like, a rape revenge movie is made it to the big screen or whatever. But it's still dressed up in this, like, you know, men's idea of what a strong woman is, which is, like, pink wig and candy cane and guns and it's cartoony. And I know that was what they were going for, and it is written by a woman, and like, there's bits of it that are great. But, yeah, I just... I don't know, I'm pivoting here, but I just put, like, also I, you know, I'm developing a couple of shows, musicals and things, and theatre shows, and I've gone through a few iterations of it where it's very much people want me to be sat on an amp, mascara running down my face, smoking a cig, heartbroken again by the world that just doesn't make sense. Oh, and it's still just this girl in a band is fetishized still. Like, I can't be that unless it's going to be, you know, strung out on drugs and alcohol, sex addicts.
People want that Winehouse fantasy for you.
Yeah, yeah, they do. And I'm like, yeah, I live like that. But also, not quite. But like, yeah, it's more than that. I feel like we're just still at the start of female-centered storytelling or queer-centered storytelling or, you know, so I'll take what I can get is my answer to the backlash about Drag Race.
And just like, yeah, there are limitations of like what a reality show can do. But like, even I was watching the most recent All Stars the other day, and like there was this whole kind of thing about how one of the queens, Akiria C. Davenport, how she, you know, lived as a trans woman and then she detransitioned and she still had her lower body sort of had some surgeries done, and how it was like living that way. And I just was like, even when I was watching this show in 2014 for the first time, like having this kind of story on television was unthinkable. You know what I mean? That was like, I was looking up because I did start watching this show in, like, I think 2013, 2014. And like, that was the year Transparent came out. And that was the year Laverne Cox was the first trans person to ever be nominated for an Emmy. And like, that, it was kind of a year that was the beginning of like trans culture becoming part of the main culture. And like, you really, like, even though Drag Race is a kind of a checkered history with that stuff, it is improving, and like those stories are coming more and more. I'm just so grateful to have them.
Yeah, me too. And it's how change happens. Like, it feels difficult and very, very present, and people don't like it, and then it's normalized, and that's how you get, you know, that equality. So the more the better. In whatever sort of capacity it comes in for now.
We're giving very pageant queen answers.
Are they? No, but yeah, I am. I'm a pageant queen. I'm a very weird pageant.
We are the comedy queens.
The worst noise ever. Oh my God, I love it. Oh my God.
Love Gia Gunn so much. All right, so I better let you go. But before you do, I want us to talk about your favourite outfits. I've got a few here.
Okay. Oh, shit. Okay, you go first.
Okay, so Trinity K. Bonet's hippie look. I'm obsessed with.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, so good.
So pink when she, and orange crop top and flares.
And circle glasses. When she wears a like, centre-part long Naomi Campbell hat. I love it when they call wigs hats. It's just divine.
She and her doing that lip sync with kind of crossing and uncrossing her legs, like sitting on the stage. Ugh. And just like, it's like she's moves like water in that. Yeah. It's just so good. The other one I have written down is April Carrion's umbrella look.
Yeah,
which I beautiful. Think you should do.
That's so true. I should. Maybe I could. Oh God, yeah. No, yeah, that's helpful. I'm trying to think out what my my big London look's going to be this time. So that's a good direction.
I just have a real vision for you performing. I do this all the time, but like peeking out from behind the umbrella.
Yeah,
you know,
that would
it's
be
just
beautiful. Oh my God. Yes, let's do a conference call about this in the future.
Yeah, you got to get me on the credit team.
I know.
And then the other two I have written down is Bendela Creme's cheesecake look, which, like, Bendela Creme made that with hot glue in a design challenge.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just incredible.
That always baffles me, that one. I can't believe
that. Baffling. It's like, it's too much to cope with. And my final favorite is Adored Lana's diamond tutu look. With
I was going to say that
the chain
one.
Between her wrists.
Yes. And that wig, that, like, structured sort of wig. She's so beautiful. I love Adore Delano's confessional look, which
yes,
is just
the
cute
hat.
Little cap.
Adore Delano so in the confessionals in general just makes me die. Like,
I was really
Selena. What's funny about Selena? I like pizza and I got shot by Yolanda.
So good. I love her so much. I love, I really fancy Miley, and that was the start of my, like, Miley crush, and Odor looks and feels like Miley to me as well, so it was all a bit of a, oh man, I'm trying to think. My memory, I've drank too much booze in my life to remember. I'm Googling it now. From season six or ever.
I don't mind.
Actually, I love that the Courtney acts big wings thing.
Oh, yeah.
I love the wings, but I really love... I've worn something before, which is like a really structured, like, body that's like plastic. Bustier. Yeah, it's like plastic body is just put on your body and it's like you're stuck into it. I love shit like that. And I just can't stop. I just want to give a shout out to Tace in general, who I am, like... Okay. I just can't stop thinking about, and that, I just don't think I've ever seen anything more beautiful than that red memory lip sync look. That's the only thing I can think about when you said favourite look. So, like, wasn't even, like, the most amazing look, but I've just, it's, like, jaw-dropping. I just screenshotted, and, like, my friend who doesn't watch it, I was like, just look at how beautiful this is. That's, like, in
frustrating when you have that friend who won't watch it. Like,
yeah.
Like, Dolly, who's been on the podcast a lot, like, she just refuses to engage with me on this. And it's, like, this one thing that we just will not... I find it so bratty.
Yeah, yeah.
They won't watch it.
Yeah, me too. I'm like, yeah, grow up. Watch this. Watch grow this show up. About men dressing up as women, please. Yeah. Oh, God. And also, my other favourite moment is Odor Delano's vocals on the Rusical. There's something so beautiful about it, even though what she's singing is just total mad shit. It's like, oh, the greatest, so good. It's beautiful. She emotes about this fucking bullshit daft fish oil storyline. It's like,
oh my God, the fish oil.
So stupid. I love it so much.
Oh, there's just so many things in my head from that season that will just sit there. Like the stand-up comedy challenge when Courtney's like, they're the mean gays. She's doing like a cappella as a stand-up comedy challenge, and it's so weird.
It just doesn't work. Oh God. Oh my God. We should do a Drag Race recap show, or just no one
wants. I would love that.
Well, we could do it for the next UK one. I'll text
you. What the world needs. Two cis women about drag queens.
Just for us. It's just for us. Or we should just hang out. Oh, yeah.
I would love that. I really would. I'm going to let you go. You've given me so much of your time. But
it's been really fun.
It's been really, really great. So you perform as Self-Esteem. What should we be looking out for? When's the fucking album, Rihanna?
I know, right? It was meant to be August and now it's October. So it does have, it's a bit of a wait yet. But October. But there's a new single in about a month's time. A new video that I'm just planning now. There's lots happening. I'm breadcrumbing you until October. So there'll be enough. But yeah, my social media is where to find out everything. It's just self-esteem. And I'm on tour in November. I'm everywhere. I'm actually the primary COVID dropout girl at the moment. So if you're going to a festival, it's likely I'll be at it.
I was thinking this. I was looking at tickets for End of the Road and I was like, I wonder if she'll just be there.
Honey, not yet, but maybe. All being well. If I've not got COVID, I'm there apparently at the moment, but that's fine.
I love that for you. I love, booked and blessed. Yeah. Always booked and blessed. As you can probably tell, I'm a huge fan of Self-Esteem, aka Rebecca Lucy Taylor, and she was kind enough to let us use How Can I Help You, her brand new single, as the outro for today's episode. It's a fantastic song. It's so much fun. It just makes you want to, like, stomp down the street wearing a blazer, you know, putting a cigarette out with your heel. But, you know, if you have the time, do go and look at the video as well, because she directed the video. It's just, it's a very powerful piece of cinema. So please follow Self-Esteem, listen to all her music. She's the best. Do it.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig.
Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.